Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Ariel Montserrat, and welcome to the Green Egg Radio Hour. Sylvie Selu will be here shortly. She's having some difficulty with her phone. And we're going to be talking about her near-death experience a little bit later on in the show when she comes on. I was speaking with her a while back, and she brought it up, and she told me the whole story, and it was really amazing. And it was really, it was wonderful because it wasn't from a Christian perspective, as so many are. And so, anyway, what I was going to do first is talk about a couple things that happened in the news. For one thing, today in Washington State, probably had parties all over the whole place. It was the first day where same-sex marriage was legal, and they started marrying people shortly after midnight at downtown in City Hall in Seattle. And it also was the first day that pot was legal. And the cops, all I can say is I think the cops must firmly be for legalization, because the one thing, it's legal to use it recreationally in Washington. It is not legal to buy yet. They have to work all that out. And it's not legal to smoke in public. However, people all lined up all around the Seattle Space Needle and lit up right at midnight of today, and had a big party and all, and people were just smoking openly on the street, and cops had told everybody, we're not going to arrest anyone for smoking out on the streets. So I think that's pretty amazing.
I can interrupt, but Sylvia is here.
You got Sylvia here?
Mm-hmm.
Sylvia?
I'm here.
Oh, hey, glad you could make it here.
Well, I've been trying for about the past 10 minutes, and I don't know why it wouldn't go through.
And it's not Mercury retrograde, so we can't blame that. Anyway, I was just going over the news events, and what we're going to do is, in a few minutes, Sylvie will tell her, talk about her near-death experience. And we request that you not call in until she's finished. We'll let you know, and because it would just be very difficult if we were having to stop and answer questions or, you know, talk. And so, anyway, that's what we'll be doing. There was something else. Oh, yes, the Mormon Church did a U-turn today. The Mormon Church has announced that they no longer believe that people choose to be gay. They believe that people are born that way, and they're encouraging all of their members to reach out and embrace the LGBTG community. Yeah. And let's hope other churches follow suit. Let's hope. So anyway, that was the other big news. So, Sylvie, you ready to tell your story?
Sure.
Okay. How long ago was this, first of all?
Let's see. It was back in 1993.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
92, 93, somewhere back in there. I was going through with a back surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd had a back surgery prior to that and hadn't had any complications or anything, and wasn't really expecting to have any complications with this one. And while I was in the hospital, it just so happened there was an emergency that had broken out on the where I was at, which caused the nurse that was attending to me to have to run out of the room before she could chart that she had given me a shot of morphine. Now, to back up just a little bit, see, I was admitted to the hospital for pain control. My spine was completely separated. Mm. And this was due to working for Walmart and going through their workman's comp deal. Walked around 83 days with a partially separated spine, and and ended up it just through the 83 days, it just completely came loose. So this is how I ended up having to be admitted for pain control.
Mm-hmm.
But I spent 10 days in the hospital, and this was the day of the surgery that they come in to give me the morphine, and they'd been giving this to me the whole time that I was there through a hep lock in my arm.
Mm-hmm.
So it was going directly into my bloodstream, and the nurse had given it to me and left the room, and she didn't chart that she had given me the morphine.
Oh, boy.
Well, a little while later, this was after a shift change, another nurse come in, and she says, "You haven't had your shot yet." So she pushes another dose, large, we're talking maximum dose of morphine, into my arm. And you can feel it when it hits. I don't know, it's like a big, heavy blanket coming over you. And this, when it hit my bloodstream, it really took care of the pain. I mean, what they'd been giving me was just taking the edge off to where I could bear it.
Mm-hmm.
And for a little bit, I wasn't experiencing any problems or anything. I was just very relaxed and very, just felt good, just not to be in pain.
Mm-hmm.
And about a half an hour after this, a gentleman came in to give me a muscle relaxer. They give you some sort of a shot in the hip prior to going into surgery.
Mm-hmm.
To relax you. So he gave me that, and they immediately loaded me up on a gurney and was transporting me to the pre-op. And they got me there, and they parked me. You know, I could look to my left and my right, and there were other patients awaiting surgery. And it was very, very cold in the room. I remember that. And they left. You know, everybody left the room. It was just us patients laying there.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I got to where I was having difficulty breathing. And it was frightening, and all of a sudden my breath just left. I couldn't take a breath in, and I heard that what they call a death rattle, I guess. It's very very low and just raspy sounding.
Mm-hmm.
But I just absolutely could not take a breath, and I realized that something's very wrong here, and I could feel my body struggling with this, you know, just struggling, fighting to take a breath. And
and
I looked around, and there was nobody there, and even if there were, I couldn't call out to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, in my mind, I just told my body, you got to settle down, and I calmed down. And then I felt what was an unplugging. If you've ever seen stereo plugs, you know, that you can plug into the front of your radio or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
It was like those type of plugs unplugging from my toes, and I could literally hear them unplugging all the way up to my head.
Wow.
And once it got up to my head and, you know, the last few pops happened, I could sit up out of my body. I could just literally sit up and look around.
Mm-hmm.
I never did turn around and look at myself. I guess I didn't have to. I knew that, well, I'm disconnected here.
Mm-hmm.
And about that time, they came in to get me, and I laid back down on the gurney, and I was looking at them as they were coming up to look at me, and they were in a panic. They grabbed a bag and started pushing air into my lungs, and that was neither here nor there to me. I was just, you know, kind of enjoying watching them. I remember them. We were running down the hallway. They were just rushing to get me, I guess, somewhere where they could. Well, they took me into the ORs where they took me into, and they just kept bagging and bagging, and they were rushing to get things around. And when I got into the OR, I I experienced, you know, knowing that some people were there that I couldn't see. There was someone to my right, and I'm assuming that that was my spirit guide, because whoever it was had their hand on me. I could feel that, but I couldn't see anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And off to my left, I could hear a group of people and sense that they're there. I couldn't hear like what we hear in the physical,
mm-hmm.
but I guess that's sort of what a telepathic message is all about, is
mm-hmm.
what I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And they were glad to see me, and, you know, very happy. I mean, I didn't have any fear. There was no pain, nothing like that. And I also didn't see a big light or anything. But the whole while, I knew that, you know, I was disembodied.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat up again and was just, I was just going to hop off that gurney because I wanted to go over toward my left and see who that was.
Uh-huh.
And just as I started to do that, the person to my right still had her hand on me. And she started talking to me, and she, you know, letting me know, you know, I'm not going to stop you if this is absolutely what you want to do, but are you sure this is what you want to do? You know, she kept talking about my son, and the more I thought about it, I thought, I don't want to leave this world and leave him alone, you know, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's he going to do without his mama?
Yeah.
You know, and I started thinking about how he would feel and everything, and then I thought, well, okay, I guess I'll stay. And then I started plugging back in, and it just the opposite from the top of my head down to my feet.
Oh, wow.
And as I plugged back in, it was awful. There was just so much pain, and I got this sense of falling, like falling out of the sky.
Uh-huh.
And then I began seeing things pass by. It's like I was falling down to the earth, and I was seeing the trees, the oceans, animals, people. And with everything that I could see, I could sense a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to realize through coming back in that, you know, as well as we can feel, you know, on our best days of having no problems whatsoever within our bodies,
mm-hmm.
we're still in pain.
Mm-hmm.
And this entire earth is just hurting.
Yeah.
And I suspect has been for a while, but that was just a very odd experience to me. And with as many accounts, I've read all about NDEs and things like that, and most all of them talk about a light and meeting your relatives and things like that, but that wasn't what it was for me.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but,
now, you did see some relatives, though, didn't you, or no?
Well, I sensed them. That's who I know was over to my left. I didn't actually see faces.
Uh-huh.
But you know with your grandmother and your mother and things like that, you know they give off a certain, I guess, energy, and you know that energy. You can feel that it's them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was what it was.
Wow. And now you saw animals there, too, didn't you?
Well, yeah, coming back in, I did.
Yeah. Who did, animals that had been your pets, or?
No, these were just earth animals, just dogs, lions, and elephants, and horses, and dogs and cats, birds, fish,
like
all of it.
Like Peaceable Kingdom or something, huh?
Well, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just flashes of animals, flashes of plants and people.
Wow. And this was as you were coming back in to your body?
Yes.
Wow. I wonder, wow. Every time you tell me this, there's something. There's like another little piece of information that really stands out that I hadn't noticed before. But I wonder what that was about, that you didn't see the animals, you know, the same time that you saw the people and that you apparently were in the process of crossing over.
No, I didn't see any animals, you know, when I'd come out or as
yeah.
I was coming out, I just sensed people in... what I'm assuming is my spirit guide to my right.
Were you able to actually see her, or did you have a sense of what she looked like?
No, I couldn't see anything. It was just
okay.
Like I was just on that verge of crossing the veil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going through the veil. I could.
Yeah.
It was so close, like almost like you could reach out and touch.
Uh huh.
But not quite through.
Wow. Wow. Geez, I'm just astounded because I've never had an experience like this, but I've always been deeply interested. And I studied this back in like the late 70s and the 80s when it was first, like Raymond Moody came out with the book Life After Life.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an MD, and he started noticing that when he was a surgeon, and he started noticing that when he would lose a patient and they would be, you know, they would be dead for several minutes at least, and they'd come back and they were able to repeat verbatim the exact conversations that they had just had in the room, and the person was dead, actually, flatlining. And
yep.
He started to wonder about this, you know, what's going on. And so our conversation the other day when we were talking about it, it made me want to get on the internet and do a little bit of research and see, you know, what was new about all of this, if anything. And there is an enormously growing body of evidence, scientific evidence, proving that this actually happens. And one of the things is that, one thing that happened, a lady by the name of Dr. Yvonne Kaysen brought back information and about a friend of hers and said, when I was dead, I saw your brain and it had pus all around it. All right? What she's describing is meningitis. And the thing was, her friend was perfectly healthy. And she asked her friend, please, you know, get an MRI or whatever it is that they needed. And they did, and sure enough, they had meningitis. And because of early treatment, she had saved her friend's life.
Wow.
So, yeah, things like that, you know? Things that make you go, Now, another thing I uncovered was groups of dying people can share the same near-death experience. And so you'd have, like, in this one instance, there was a group of coworkers together. And they all saw each other outside their bodies. They, when they came back, they were able to describe what everybody else had been doing. Everybody else had seen the exact same thing, which kind of reminds me of ayahuasca, you know? So, you know, for those who don't know, ayahuasca is used by South America indigenous people as a way of bonding with the community because they all share this herbal mixture, and it has DMT, and they all have the same exact experience. They see exactly the same things, which I think is really interesting.
That is interesting. I do remember talking with my doctor after that, because I had explained to him what I'd gone through.
Uh-huh.
And he was insistent that my eyes were shut the entire time. He told me my heart never stopped beating, but that, you know, they were having to breathe for me. And
right. You were right at the edge then.
Yes, right at the edge. I believe if my heart had stopped beating, I would probably have been able to have gone through the veil. And what was even more strange, after the surgery, after I was released from the hospital, I wasn't able to make the trip all the way home, so I stayed with a friend and was sharing her daughter's room with her. And I had a very strange experience while asleep, and yes, I was on medication, but it wasn't the time, you know, it wasn't as heavy as what I had in the hospital. But it was. This is one where I was found myself standing, looking at myself in the bed. And
wow.
Again, the person that was on my right in the hospital, what I assume was my spirit guide, was now on my left. But I could not, I tried to turn around and look at her, but I wasn't, it was like I wasn't allowed to. I just couldn't quite turn, and something would stop me. Mm-hmm. And I heard this strange, almost like water boiling to my right. And I looked, and it was just the wall, you know. And through the wall stepped this big black creature. And you've seen the gray aliens, right?
Yeah.
Almond eyes and all that.
Yeah.
Well, this was an alien, but it was very tall. It was a black, shiny black. It kind of reminded me, I remember thinking, was it covered in some kind of vinyl or latex or something?
Wow.
It was just very strange, and I was very close to it. I could have reached out and touched it, but I didn't know if I wanted to. And
yeah.
I noticed that it had red blood veins flowing, you know, forehead blood veins like humans do.
Yeah.
But they were just scarlet red, and the veins going down through its neck, and it was very muscular. And I was just so curious. I wasn't afraid of it or anything, but very curious, and I kept looking. And when I got down to its feet, well, it didn't have any feet.
Huh.
It was floating in the air, and there was a black mist and a red mist coming out of the bottom of it, almost like that mist was keeping it floating above the ground. And I was just kept wondering, well, what is this? And I turned back and looked at myself in the bed, and just couldn't figure out what it was looking at me. Well, all of a sudden it just turned into that red and black mist, and it came up in the air, made a dive, and started coiling around the bottom of my feet, just coiling up my body, and I didn't like that.
Yeah.
And at that very moment, I sat up in the bed and told that whatever it was, I said, "You leave me alone." And I noticed when I sat up that I was just completely covered in sweat. My bed was drenched.
Yeah.
And see, the thing is that after that back surgery, I wasn't supposed to be able to sit up on my own like that. So,
got it. Yeah.
You know, it just serious. Very odd experience. To say the least. Yeah. But that made me begin to wonder about, you know, aliens and things like that, if there's not something to that.
Mhm. Yeah, and if so, what?
Yes. What?
Yeah. I'm just curious, did anything happen with Walmart? I mean, what did they think about you ending up in the hospital like that?
Well, with Walmart, I was involved in a lawsuit with them, but I did win.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, I didn't know that.
Yeah. That was
good for you.
About a 2-year-long lawsuit, but, you know, I won.
Yeah. That's, you know. Anyway, I know that was kind of not related to the topic, really. But so do you have any ideas about what actually happened to you?
No, I don't. Outside of just catching a glimpse of what we can expect when we leave these bodies.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, that's a useful thing to know, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You know,
it left me not being afraid of death. I mean, I'm definitely. It's helped with family members that have passed on.
Mm-hmm.
It's helped me to be able to talk to them and let them know what to expect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, from experiencing it myself. And
you'd be a good person to have around when someone's passing over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Times that I've been next to the bed when someone is passing over, I know when, just about when they're going to go ahead and step over.
Mm-hmm.
And I seem to be able to sense when, you know, if they're waiting on something.
Mm-hmm.
Like my ex-mother-in-law, she had Alzheimer's, and I stayed by her bed until she expired, and she She kept going in and out, of, I don't want to call it consciousness. I think the best way to describe that is where the brain is actually connected to this reality, because you can tell by the pupils of the eyes, they'll, if they go wide, then, you know, you're going out.
Uh-huh.
And hers would come to, you know, normal, and then they go wide, and I just kept getting a sense she was waiting on someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I told my ex-husband at that point, I said, I get the feeling she's waiting for her youngest son to come let her know that he's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally showed up in the hospital room and took her hand and held on to it, and I told him, I said, just talk to her and let her know you're going to be okay. So I think she's worried about you.
Mm-hmm.
And he sat there and talked with her for about a half an hour, and after that, she didn't come back to anymore, and she expired over in about 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
She went on.
Wow. So were you able to share with her your experience to help her feel better and, you know, about what might be happening when she dies?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I talked to her constantly while she was going through that, because she would... she would just have these moments where you knew she could, I knew she could hear me.
Uh-huh.
She would squeeze my hand, you know, and I would ask her, you know, if that's, I'd make sure that was her, you know, of her own volition and not just some response from the Alzheimer's that she was suffering from. And I'd her name was Edith, and I'd say, Edith, if you can hear me, squeeze my hand, you know, and she would, on command.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew she could hear at times
mm-hmm.
by doing that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. The only thing I've had is, it wasn't a near-death experience, but it was an out-of-body experience, and mm-hmm. I was about 26 or so at the time, so this is about 30 years ago. And I was not in a good place whatsoever in my life. And I was a flight attendant, and I had a layover in Salt Lake City at the Marriott Hotel there. And I remember I was extremely exhausted, just extremely. And I literally prayed that I would not, that I would, when I laid down to go to sleep, that I would not wake up. I was just that, you know, I had horrible depression and other issues going on. And the next thing I know, I must have drifted off to sleep, and I didn't wake up, but it was like my eyes were open and I was seeing, and there was an angel right to the right of my bed. And I remember, I could see her. She looked just like me, but she had on white, and she had white wings. And she reached her hand down and took me by the hand, by my right hand. And when she did that, she pulled me up out of my body and took me. We were like flying. We were, I don't know, 2 feet off the ground or so. And she takes me over to the window, and, of course, hotel windows on, you know, the 25th floor or whatever it was, you can't open them, because people would commit suicide, so that they didn't do that anymore. And she's about to take me right through the window, and I say to her, I can't go through that window. And she said, yes, you can. Come on. And I did. I was still holding her hand, and she took me out through the window. And I flew up, and it really was like flying, up above the planet. I could look down, and I could see the oceans. I could see all the blue and the green. And I also saw things that I would describe as like ancient Greek architecture, like the Parthenon, you know, with the big tall columns and all of that. And it glowed. It was like luminescent and luminous. And at that point, I got tangled up. I had a silver cord coming from the base of my spine. I got tangled up in it, and I couldn't go any further. And I got impatient because I couldn't untangle it, and I went to pull the cord out. And at that point, the angel said, No. Cannot do that. You have to go back into your body immediately, and you can't come out. And the next thing I know, I wake up, and it was like with a startle, like a jolt. It was, you know what it felt like is that my body just sort of jolted when my spirit came back in.
Like it snapped back in.
Yeah. It took me years to figure this out, but I think it was sort of symbolic. And what it was I'm not allowed to commit suicide. I cannot do that. That is not, you know, because the silver cord is what attaches you to life. And when you die, you don't have that silver cord anymore. And but that was real clear. I was not to end my own life. I was to untangle things. And that took years. I'll tell you, it took a lot of years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I agree with that assessment. You are not allowed to commit suicide.
Yeah. Now, did you get a message like that during your experience?
No, I really didn't get any messages whatsoever. Not so much messages as coming to an understanding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after this experience, I've... Like you're talking about flying,
mm-hmm.
I've been able to literally come out of my body in dreams and fly, but when I fly I have weird experiences. I like to do acrobatics,
mm-hmm.
for some reason. I guess learning to fly. I can remember several dreams where I would take off and I thought, well, maybe I could do this like a bird, and I put my arms out.
Mm-hmm.
And I would see power lines, and I'd think too low, and I would remember how birds gain height, so I would turn my hands like birds feathers do, you know, kind of had my
uh-huh.
hands angled back, and I learned to gain altitude and how to come down, but it took a while to learn how to land,
mm-hmm.
and I remember one extraordinary landing. I was flying over the mountains, and I was trying to descend smoothly, but it didn't go smoothly. And I wound up crashing in someone's yard, and it was a very nice house. But the people that came out were wearing overalls. They were hillbillies.
Mm-hmm.
They were well-to-do hillbillies. And they were looking at me like, what's the matter with her? Is she drunk?
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I couldn't take flight again, so I took off walking down the road because I didn't know how to explain to these people. Well, I was just flying overhead and dropped in.
Yeah. that old Kitty Rogers song, just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Yeah, yeah. You know, for me, it's just, I don't know, you know, taking off with the flying and everything, I get silly with it. It's freedom to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you're not constrained like you are in the conscious realm.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And I do remember one dream I had. I ran up on an airplane and had flown up next to it and literally looked in at the pilot and waved at him. And then took off ahead of the plane.
Did he wave back?
He just, his eyes got big as quarters.
He saw you.
He saw me.
Oh, that is wild.
And I don't know what I looked like to him, you know, whether I was, you know, I felt like I was just in human form, but he done a double take, and his eyes were just big as quarters.
Let me tell you, when I was a flight attendant, one time I was up in the cockpit, because when you had a little break, you know, after the meal service or something, you could go up and the pilots would show you the Northern Lights if that was going on or something like that. And so I'm up there bringing them coffee, and while I'm up there, the captain just goes, "Whoa, Elmer, did you see that?" And I didn't, because I wasn't looking out the window. And they had seen a UFO. It literally was a UFO. And the guy turned to me and said, I've been flying, whatever, I think it was like 30 years, and he said, lady, you wouldn't believe the stuff I've seen up here in the air.
Oh, my.
I wonder if that was the pilot that waved there that you saw.
Well, I don't know. I remember he had dark hair. I remember that it was a short haircut parted on the side. That's what I remember about the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even remember. It was a commercial flight. I remember that. It was one of the bigger planes, but he was just astounded. And I remember, I need to get out of here. I'm liable to cause this guy to crash or something.
Well, he had a story to tell his buddies.
Yeah. But I mean, for the rest of my flying dreams, it's just been learning how, you know, and I don't have them as often now as I once did, and I don't know why.
Maybe you've learned how.
Maybe so. I mean, I dream all the time. My husband is constantly complaining because he says, I don't know where you're at. He says, but you're chattering constantly. He says, that's all you do is talk, talk, talk.
Wow. So you it's like you've got one foot in both worlds.
Yeah. And some of them I can remember and some of them I can't. Mm-hmm. And I went through this phase. Well, it was at the latter part of last year, about this time last year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where I was at or what the circumstances were, but I would wake up just beating the hell out of my husband.
Oh, my.
I mean, punching him, kicking
wow.
him, had him by the hair of the head.
Oh, boy.
And he just laid there and took it. And I asked him, I said, why are you just laying there and taking it? Why don't you wake me up? He said, because I'm afraid you're going to kill me.
Yeah, I'd be afraid of that, too.
But I felt so bad because I wouldn't harm a hair on his head.
No, I know that.
And he's so gentle. And
yes,
and
he is.
I told him, I said, please don't let me do that. Do you just grab my arms and restrain me and just talk to me and wake me up? I don't know. I still don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Or what was going through that, and I'm still planning on going to see Tish Owens and having her do a hypnosis session with me to see what was up about that.
Oh, that's an excellent idea. That's an excellent idea. I think that's a really good idea. For those who don't know, Tish Owens owns a pagan
Goddess
bookstore.
In the Moon. Yeah.
Yeah, Goddess in the Moon in Nashville, Tennessee, and that's where Sylvie and I live. And Sylvie is our web wizard, our web designer for Green Egg. She's the one that has created all the beauty that's there. And we will be hosting this show together. And for this show, we just wanted to talk, just have the two of us so you could kind of get to know us, and then we'll be having guests normally on our show. So anyway, Sylvie, are you about ready to take some calls if we have any?
Absolutely.
Okay. So anyway, we're here, standing by, ready to take your calls, and the phone number is. Wait a minute. Oh, boy. Where did it go?
The number is 718-664-6436.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So give a call and share your experience out of body or near death or ask questions or whatever you want to do. I remember studying this stuff, like I say, back in the late 70s and the 80s. But I hadn't really read anything about it, near-death experience, for like maybe 25 years. And I went online when I was doing my research. I mean, they have discovered a lot. They have discovered a heck of a lot about near-death experiences. And one of the things is they've discovered that brain chemistry alone does not account for it. There's something else going on. And, you know, for a long time, some scientists thought it was just brain chemistry. That was just the brain, you know, that's what would happen when the brain shuts down. But they have proven that that's not it. And
that's good to know, because I remember my neurosurgeon, you know, that's what he attributed it to, was brain chemistry and, you know, the unplugging feeling and things like that. He thought it was the, what he called the synapses in the brain, you know, shutting down. But my heart was still beating, so that, you know, and I read up on this after talking with him and come to realize that the synapses of your brain do not shut down until after the blood quits flowing. And even though you quit breathing, your blood still has enough oxygen in it to keep everything alive. It takes about a full 8 minutes to go brain dead.
Wow.
And I don't know what amount of time had elapsed between the time that they were bagging me, and I'm assuming it wasn't long. Somehow or another, they kept oxygen going into my blood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but even that artificial breathing, I came to realize that artificial breathing does not pull you away from that veil. And that, too.
That's interesting.
That made me wonder about coma patients.
Yeah.
Because a lot of coma patients are on respirators doing the breathing for them.
Uh-huh.
And doctors and everyone assume, well, they can't hear you, that, you know. But I don't think that's true, because I had, just from my experience, I knew exactly what was going on.
Yeah.
Every minute, you know, I could see nurses running. I could see them gathering instruments. I could see the anesthesiologist when he grabbed that tube to intubate. I watched him get snap that thing together, hook up the hose, and you know, hit his buttons right up to the point where he pulled my chin up and started putting that thing down my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think at this point it's pretty well acknowledged that people in comas, you know, a lot of times are able to hear what's going on. And, you know, so they encourage people to bring music or read to, you know, their loved one that they're visiting, something like that.
Yes.
They also have seen a lot of evidence for reincarnation with near-death experiences. And I think that's real interesting, too.
I think it is, too, because I've had dreams where I was in a completely different time period. I was a farmer, and I was a man.
Uh-huh. Huh.
I had a full beard. I've often told my husband about, you know, when I have dreams where I'm a man. And he thinks that accounts for some of my not being squeamish about manly things like baiting a hook or skinning out an animal, you know, because I'm a certified taxidermist.
Mm-hmm.
And though I will not kill an animal and really don't appreciate sport hunting,
mm-hmm.
but I have, where someone's found a deer that has been hit on the road,
mm-hmm.
and at times some of them have been babies, and they bring them to me. I have mounted the baby deer,
mm-hmm.
you know, to preserve their beauty,
mm-hmm.
and that makes me feel good as far as animals go, because they're so pretty with their fur and just their innocence.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's my deal with the taxidermy.
Well, you grew up on a farm, and so you have all those basic survival skills. I mean, you have told me how to... You've
Hello?
Told me how to make lye. Mm-hmm. You've how to make soap. You know, how to make a deer. All kinds of things like that.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
You also know hoodoo, too, because you grew up with all that.
Yes, I sure did.
Yeah.
My grandmother was something else.
I remember you telling me the story of what your grandmother planted in between the corn rows.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she was growing pot when it wasn't legal.
Yeah, this is like, the 50s or something?
Yeah, well, let's see. Now, I was born in 1964, so this was during the 70s.
Oh, okay. All right.
But, see, she always told me that was sage. I guess, to keep me out of trouble. Of course, you know how children are. They'll go to school and they'll talk. So
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's why she did that. But one day I remember going to gather some corn, and I gathered some sage while I was at it, and she had a big stew, pot of stew on the stove, and I thought, well, I will just add some herb to that and put some sage in the stew. And we were almost completely through with dinner when I told her what I'd done. And I thought she was just going to have a heart attack right there.
She needed a joint after that, I'm sure.
Well, she explained to me after that what that was, so.
Yeah. Was that something that she did, you know, like traditionally, or... I mean, is that something, did people smoke pot up here in the mountains?
Well, my uncle used to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty lucrative, so she figured might as well not waste the space between the corn. And we all just raised it, you know, and would sell it. It was a little extra income.
Uh-huh.
'Cause, you know, back in the 70s, you know, being a farmer, that's when being a farmer was getting very difficult. The price of cattle and things were beginning to decrease.
Mm-hmm.
And you just couldn't count on selling cattle and having enough money to make it throughout the year.
Yeah.
And plus her and my grandfather being retired and living on Social Security and things, you know, we had vehicles and things we had to keep maintain, tractors and balers and mowing machines and just, you know,
mm-hmm.
all just equipment. And of course they needed periodic medication as mm-hmm. they aged.
Yeah, right. Well, I grew up in Los Angeles, you know, this huge city. But I always wished I'd lived in the country. So finally I got to do that when we moved here to Tennessee 7.5 years ago. And I have learned so much about farming since I've been here. And I always had respect for farmers, but after getting to know some of them here, I have extreme respect for them. I mean, it is not an easy life
no.
at all. You have to, you know, if your milk cow is giving birth and something is wrong, you got to get up in the middle of the night and go outside in the middle of winter when it's 2 degrees outside
yeah.
and take care of her, you know?
Yeah.
And if
That's
you
right.
have a bad enough rainstorm, that might destroy your whole crop of hay or whatever.
Yes.
You know?
Or if you've got hay, especially if you've got hay cut and it's down and it rains.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, as soon as it stops, you've got to get out there with a hay rake, and you have got to turn it and turn it and turn it to try and keep it dry enough.
Uh-huh.
You know, because
uh-huh.
it'll mold. And,
yeah.
And then if you wind a bale up with moisture in it, it's going to compost and burn your barn down.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also not good for the animals either when
no.
hay is moldy. I know the man that used to come and deliver hay when I had my horse, and he was a hay farmer, and he would never come, if it was even lightly sprinkling, he would never come to deliver. He'd always wait till it was a sunny day to deliver, and he'd put it right inside the barn, and then we'd cover it up so
yes.
it would never get any wet, you know, any moisture in it. He actually has it tested for moisture content, too. And, you know, first time he came up here, he gave me this whole flyer with all this information about the percentage of moisture content and I don't know what all. So there was a lot of science involved in that, too, you know.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, farming's come a long way, you know, as on the mm-hmm. science side of things compared to what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back when I was growing up, we baled the square bales.
Mm-hmm.
And we stacked them in the barn, and we had a humidity gauge inside the barn.
Mm-hmm.
And we wouldn't, you know, keep a check on that to make sure that, you know, there wasn't too much humidity in there, because Mm-hmm. You know, any type of mold, like you're saying, can make your animals sick, and it's really bad when you have a whole herd of cattle and all of them are coming down sick one after the next.
Yeah.
And plus the vet bills would, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the vet bills. You know, and that's just some of the things that happen. I mean, and it's, you know, right now and for several years, the independent farmer has been getting squeezed out by big ag. And I see it happening, and they see it happening, too. I read Tennessee used to have the population of Tennessee used to be something like only 1% weren't farmers, and now it's something like 1%. Only 1% are farmers here in Tennessee.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah. I mean, my next-door neighbor, he's a dairy farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And he is squeezed by just all kinds of regulations on his cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly having to install this or install that, and he complains about it, but in a way, you know, I'm glad that that's there, because we don't need our, you know, if someone's doing or they're involved with big agriculture, what they're doing has to be safe.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
we do have a caller from area code 570.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right. Hello.
Hello, Ariel and Sylvie.
Hello.
It's Radagast the Bard calling.
Oh, hey, Radagast.
How are you doing? I'm doing good. I'm listening to you guys.
Well, thanks for calling. To our listeners, Radagast is the official poet laureate of Green Egg. And are you going to have any poems? We're getting ready to put out a new issue of Green Egg in a couple weeks. You going to have any poems for us?
Yes, I'm going to have to get a poem or two into you very shortly.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so we'll have a Yule poem to look forward to.
I just wanted to call this evening to wish you you both much success with your new show.
Thank you.
Oh, I hope it does well. You're quite welcome.
Yeah.
I'll be listening. You can count on me. I'll be listening every Wednesday night.
Do you want to real quick tell us about your dog, Aubrey, and her struggle with Lyme's disease? This is an amazing story.
Well, in fact, Aubrey's listening to you right now.
Oh, that's sweet.
Oh.
Aubrey was a couple years ago, or almost 3 years ago now, when she was a puppy, where she was diagnosed with Lyme disease. And I had no idea that that was a possibility, because she was just a little puppy and she wasn't outside much at that time yet. And the veterinarian told me that apparently she may have gotten it actually from the litter of puppies where she was purchased at a farm. And the veterinarian said that she would probably have Lyme disease for the rest of her life.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be treated for it on a yearly basis.
Mm-hmm.
And so she received the shot for it. And a year later, when she went back for her yearly physical, the doctor was quite amazed that she did not have the Lyme disease in her blood system.
Mm-hmm. Not a bit of it.
No, it had left her completely, and he was quite amazed at that.
Yeah.
And he's still going to give her, of course, a shot every year just to make sure.
Uh-huh.
But actually, a prayer to Goddess Bridget at that time, after she was diagnosed with Lyme disease, just asking if she would help her be as well as possible, certainly came to fruition, and she was completely eradicated with the disease.
And she goes out hiking with you all the time, too.
Yes, she
birding
does. She goes,
and all of that.
She goes with me all the time. In fact, she's almost with me 24/7. You're like my little shadow.
She is, if anybody's listening that used to listen to the show that I did with Oberon, at the end of the show you might have heard me say goodnight, Tom and Aubrey. Well, this is the Tom and Aubrey I'd say goodnight to. Because you have listened to every single show that we've had, haven't you?
Yes, that's correct. I listen to every Over to Oberon and Ariel show. Everyone,
yeah.
Never miss one. Yep. So now I'm listening to your first one.
What's that?
And now I'm listening to your first show and hopefully many more.
Yeah, hopefully many more too, yeah.
Okay, well, you guys have a nice evening. I don't want to hold you up too long.
Okay, thanks for calling in.
Your talk is very interesting. I'm enjoying it very much.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sylvie, and thank you, Ariel.
Good night.
Have a good evening. Good
okay.
night.
Okay. We're getting toward the end of our show here, and I did want to talk about next week's guest. Our next week's guest is Tony, and I hope I get this right, Mazursky. And he's going to be talking about what's happening, he's going to be talking about several things. He has a book that he's written, and there's something going on at Wikipedia where pagan entries are getting deleted, and entries for pagan leaders like Ian Corrigan and some of the others. So he's going to be talking about what's going on there and what we can do to help out with that. And he's from Australia, and he's quite an interesting person. So that will be next week's guest. And after that, we have another upcoming guest is Stephen Emrys. And Sylvie, you've read his books. Do you want to tell a little bit about what his books are about?
Well, I've read one, and I'm in the midst of his recent book.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, but he's been exploring sort of his faith across the board and finding the pagan roots in like Christianity and
in the Bible.
Bringing all of this together, you know, to just showcase, you know, this religion's roots, so
yeah.
to speak.
Yeah.
And he's a very interesting author. And
mm-hmm. He's a good writer.
Yes, he is.
Mm-hmm.
You can find him on Facebook. They've got, you can look up Stephen Emrys. And he also publishes The Provocation. That's a pretty much a general news type publication he has online.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have a little Facebook page called Pagan News Now,
mm-hmm.
where they draw from, you know, different pagan sources to try and put forth to his audience what's going on in the pagan world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He did a wonderful a poll of pagans, too, and that's in our very last issue of Green Egg. You can find it at greeneggzine.com, and it's the issue that's right on there on the home page. Just go in there. And it was a really interesting poll and very, very well done as well. So, and then we also have, probably in January, I think, we'll have Ellen Everett Hotman, who has two new books that she's written, and she'll be talking about those. And one of them is about medicinal kitchen herbs.
Oh, wonderful.
And then the other one is she's written a couple books on, they're fiction, but on Druid, the ancient Druids, and it's like a tale told about Druids. So it's pretty interesting. So anyway, I guess we've reached the end of our hour here, and it's time for us to sign off. And so, Sylvie, do you have anything else to say, to add?
No, just looking forward to the upcoming shows and hoping everybody will tune in and be with us and call
mm-hmm.
in.
Yep, and, you know, feel free to call into the show. If you would like to be on our show, if you think you have something interesting to talk about, then give me and send me an email, and that would be to greeneggzine, GREENEGGZINE, @gmail.com, and tell me what you'd like to talk about. Okay? So that's our show for tonight. And marry me. And marry Bart.
And marry me again.
Marry me again. Good night, Tom and Aubrey. Good night, Toby.
Good night.